Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave. How are you doing? Who's here?
Hey, Dave. It's Tom from Connecticut. How are you?
Welcome. How are you?
Doing good, thank you.
Super. Well, terrific. I'm glad. It sounds like I haven't checked my email. Are you going to be able to continue just not live time? Tell me your status.
So some of my evening obligations changed unexpectedly.
Ah.
So I'll try to stay on this call as long as I can. And next Wednesday as well, I might have a challenge either getting to the call on time, I might dial in late, or staying on the whole call. And then moving forward, I'll do my best to make arrangements. If I'm going to stay with the training, I'd rather do it with you guys than listening to the recorded calls and you know, self-pacing it.
If there's something that you have not been able to quite stay the course for a seminar and you have a question or a comment, you know, send it in and I'll address it at the beginning of the next seminar, or you can ask it then, so we'll compensate for that as much as possible, and we'll figure out a time for you to present your roadmap case study that would work optimally for you. So in a way, whatever will work.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate your flexibility.
Well, great. I'm glad you can stay. I think it will be significantly worth your while in every respect, exponential return on investment, as well as primarily the joy and passion of doing what you're doing. And you talked about really wanting to, you know, have your own coaching practice. So I think you're still well on your way for that.
I appreciate that. I hope so. I definitely would like to continue, if possible, and the learning in this area is definitely something I'm interested in.
Yeah, well, we'll figure out something.
Thank you again.
Great, absolutely. Who else has joined? Was there any other aspects you wanted to, you know, any progress notes or questions or things you wanted to discuss, Tom?
No, I think as I'm going through the reading and listening to the seminars and listening to the previously recorded, the time that we've spent together, I think it is still building that knowledge base.
Uh-huh.
You know, having that social work background and that MSW, learning experience and doing that type of clinical work, so much of it resonates to me naturally because of the prior knowledge. I think there's still lots of new learning. It's, you know, it's that application piece. I haven't applied it in a group setting or a coaching setting yet. So I think as I'm going through the reading and really digesting it and thinking about it, I'm thinking about, you know, how do I apply that with a client one-on-one? How do I apply that in a class setting or a group setting? And, you know, that's where I'm at. In my head, I'm putting it together as how do I now share that and use that in a coachable way?
Okay. I definitely want to keep that in mind. Are you thinking more about applying it in terms of working individually or in groups with clients or more in teaching training?
So not teaching training. So when I say teaching, that might be the wrong word. It's more about like running a class or a seminar, and then out of that, perhaps finding clients that might want to continue that work in a coaching relationship.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. And just keep in mind that kind of question and the nudging by previous people who did the training is what resulted in that 28-week protocol to look at work pages and exercises that people could do like in a group setting and then discuss it like in group coaching or in an ongoing seminar to use that as part or as a base of discussion for developing individual stories and that sort of thing. So see if that sort of thing fits with what you have in mind with the with the workbook.
It does. It absolutely does. I think the materials are great. I've been through most of it. I've skimmed through most of it, and I'm basically sticking to reading the modules. I'm in number 4 right now, and I'm finding it very valuable. And there's so much of it, so it's really, you know, cherry picking what I feel most comfortable with and what fits the seminars or classes that I hope to teach soon. But I think having all that information will be helpful as I start developing a client base, because out of those seminars, I hope to have individuals who want to extend the conversation and get into a coaching relationship around this topic.
Yeah. What I've seen in my own experience and experiences with others who have done it, just to give you a kind of a précis of what one possibility is that what makes it very useful for people in different geographic areas is to have immediately accessible a download of the entire client workbook that can be co-branded and with your own message and contact information as an added page. And when they do that, they'll see that there are other aspects, other stories other than money stories, relationship, wellness,
yes,
career, that you may find a spinoff of other group coaching interests that people have, and they already have the material for that. And even though we're more focusing on a money story, it's really a spectrum of possibilities. And this process of looking at the roadmap, I mean, the way of deconstructing a story and understanding a new one is really to understand without, we'll never see directly, but we can understand the algorithms, the patterns of mind and brain to look at what may need to be changed to write new code for the mind and brain. So this is something that's really looking at the elements of the process of change and change that works. So I think you'll find that you will be amazingly effective in doing what you're doing, and that will be significantly appreciated.
I agree, and well said, Dr. Dave, well said. And I've already have found several phrases that pay, if you will, in terms of nudging people in their own thinking, whether that's in my current work in a school system, just talking about school change, or working with individuals one-on-one in some of the substance abuse groups that I run. I had a great session, of course, not last Sunday, but the Sunday before that, and really incorporated in the group conversation with the men that I work with around, they're the authors of their own story. And when you're an adult, you either pick that you allow things to happen. We had a great conversation about rewriting a story and what does that mean, and who's the author and who are the characters and what's the plot and why do you keep retelling the same story. It was a great session, 90-minute session, and much of it was to the benefit of you and the materials you've shared with us and the seminars that I've listened to. So thank you for that.
Well, terrific. It sounds like you're making really creative application of it. And it sounds like you're just getting started. So that's super.
Thank you.
Let me check. Have Richard and Tricia joined us?
No, but I've joined you, Kim.
Oh.
I'm sorry?
No, I was saying it's Kim. I have joined you.
Kim, okay. I think Richard is still in the throes of the
recovery. No, we're both here.
We're both here. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, well, super. Bring us up to date, both of you. How are you doing and feeling, Richard?
Oh, I'm doing A-okay. The procedure had to be postponed because of some other issues that I have that have to be cleared up first.
Okay.
We just got done with tax day yesterday, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We've been working till 3 o'clock in the morning and getting up at 7, so today's a nice day of rest.
Well, I'm glad you could join us today, your first day off after.
Yeah, well, no, it's important. The thing that we listened to the call from last week, last night, and that was really amazing in terms of the fact that we want to layer new things on and do new things, but we forget because we haven't cleared out the existing pattern or the existing structure and making sure that that work gets done, because otherwise you're fighting yourself. And the whole process in terms of how the brain opposes change, and the fact that it creates the dissonance, and I love the thing about the, you did the 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, 8, what's missing? Well, there's nothing missing because you just read six numbers. The fact that focus is so important, and how your emotions can change your brain functioning, the regulation of the states of your mind, all of that is just so important. And obviously what we want to do is to be able to practice this on ourselves first before we're out there practicing it on other people.
I think that's an excellent application to really get to know our own stories and to understand them as the best preparation for being a catalyst for helping clients co-create and or revise their story.
Yeah, the key thing about that is you know that it can happen because you've done it. I mean,
exactly.
And then you also know what you went through and what your feelings were and what you looked at as being opposition or blocks, and in effect how you created your way around them and worked through them, and all of that, I think, it's a fascinating journey. I love the one quote, Robert Louis Stevenson, to travel hopefully is better than arriving.
Yeah. You know, I did a, I did a workshop in Boston weekend before last to the New England ICF group, and there were about 70 or 75 people, and I asked them a question at one point, how many of you know how to write code or computers? And one person raised their hand, and I said, how many of you would like to learn how to write code for your brain? And they slowly, I had 100% of entry. And you know, we basically did it. I did a roadmap system applied to the topic I was presenting there, which is performance enhancement. So we did a roadmap system for performance enhancement, and including or optimizing states of mind. So there's an application in whatever direction and can be for any story, although we've been focusing essentially at this point on money story. And today we're going to look in more depth at step 6, and next week at step 7. Then we're going to start applying it to different areas and different stories. And then I think go ahead.
You said something in the call about you were doing something in June in Southern California.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Because we would love to come to that.
Yeah, that's.
We have to travel a little bit less than what Kim has to travel.
Yeah. That's it's. I haven't been there yet. They've just completed it, and I'm in the first group of people that they invited to do retreats there. It's in the Redwoods near Santa Cruz. It's like a 700 acre property, and there's like miles of hiking trails and farm to market tables of food. I mean, it's really a lush resort. It's Friday afternoon or evening through Sunday noon, and it's going to be on, you know, the mind and brain aspects of money story. So, you know, there will be a lot of redundancy from what you guys do, but it, of course, it'd be fun to do it in person, and
it's going
to be a way to be much more active and interactive in doing that. And I think you know, what I want to do is make it fun and to really also teach how to do something like that, how to do workshops, if you're interested in doing that.
Oh, absolutely.
Your own money story.
So the Santa Cruz is just in our, I mean, that's about probably an hour to 2 hours south of San Francisco. So it's right in our,
yeah,
so
well,
that'd be great.
Yeah, well, I've got to figure out how to get there. I guess, I'm assuming I'll go to San Jose. Is that accurate?
Probably,
you
yeah.
could. Wherever you can get the best fares, whether it's San Jose or Oakland or San Francisco, it's all basically the same. San Jose would be the closest by a little bit, but maybe a half an hour.
And you can fly into Monterey from the main airport too, so you can look at going into Monterey as well.
Well,
but then you got to drive
bring
north.
Bring us up to date about what's up for you.
Well, you know, pretty much the same. So it's just trying to refocus a bit and keep things moving forward in all aspects, and which is always a challenge instead of just one. Channel. So do you know the date on that, Dave?
I'll send them around. It's in June.
Just trying to plug it into a calendar so we don't overbook.
It's June 9th, 9 to 11.
Perfect, thanks.
Great, thank you.
We're finding all this great information and very excited to just keep working with you and getting this restored for us as well as for others to empower others.
Well, super.
Yeah.
I hope we can. I'm hoping that a number of people who have done the training can all come together so that you can meet each other and, kind of see what you're all up to and create a kind of a consortium, a collaborative consortium.
That would be fantastic. Fabulous. We're certainly interested in taking our current practice and expanding it into, because most of the issues we run into are what is their money story? What is their life story? And a lot of that is obviously holding them back.
Super. Kim, bring us up to date.
Yes, very much similar to everybody. I'm trying to see how to bring it in. Being a financial planner, that's the core of my business.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, it's to choose. I'm not sure that I'd be able to run the whole program, but definitely different aspects of it, giving reference to you wherever I use it. So at the moment, it's just trying out a few little things with everybody, and mainly actually with myself. I mean, I've started questioning myself and a lot of my behaviors as to why I keep repeating stories.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I'm finding it fascinating. It's a lot.
Yeah, I know. That's the dilemma that I have, that I really prefer a true seminar where it's kind of give and take, but that would take so long, and I really, choose on the side of condensing it and then letting you, do the experience and the application yourself, but it means that there's a lot of material over a compressed period of time. Kim, also, if you, I think you'll find when I did the mutual introduction to Andrew in Australia, his practice is totally in a financial arena as well, but he's using this program to educate the people who engage in his particular financial program. So the two of you may have some things of interest about how you may find the application or what you're doing that may be of interest. So I hope you guys get together and...
Yeah, we have connected.
Super. Okay, great. I'll be...
Can I ask, do you have many financial planners in the States that use this work?
No, not really.
Not really?
Not at all. There was a financial a financial planner in New Zealand who moved to doing this work full time and has money mentor programs now full time, did not maintain that practice. There are some, and I'm hoping to Let me see if I can do a screen for that. I have a deadline on a project that I'm doing for 4 interactive ebooks that I don't have. As soon as I get past my deadline, I'll go in and look and see financial planners. I'll make a note to do that as soon as I can possibly get to it, in case it might be of help.
That would be great. Thank you very much.
Okay, absolutely.
If I may say something, this is Richard. There certainly is a need for financial planners to be doing this work, because I run into a lot of financial planners who do not get the fact that people don't do things because of a lot of other reasons than mm-hmm. what they focus on. I mean, it's just huge in terms of I mean, they don't even think that way. So it is really interesting. So I think, Kim, that's a market that is
untouched.
And if there's any way we can help from my financial perspective in terms of all the things that I've done in my lifetime, I'd be more than happy to contribute if I can.
That might be a really interesting special interest group. In my last training, there's one guy here in Houston. I have not met him personally yet, I mean face-to-face, but he's a financial. There's usually maybe one financial planner in the last handful of trainings that I've done, because I don't do that many trainings, because I put a lot of effort into fostering the practices and the continuing education and that sort of thing. But let me look and see, because that's an interesting that could be in a very interesting group.
That would be great.
Financial practice, yeah.
Because the other thing I've done too is that I've done it on the other side in terms of running many, many, many businesses, and that aspect of financial understanding and making decisions and all of those sorts of things that happen. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Well, and perhaps I can help each of you develop this in your own business and doing your own, you know, expansion and training and application in the ways that you want to really enhance your businesses in this regard. So,
yeah, well, definitely that's mind, something.
However,
that,
I can be of help. I'll be happy.
That I want to do with you, so.
Well, super. Anything else any of you would like to talk about or ask or mention before we move into the material?
So it, what I wanted to know is, just because I get confused when you're speaking about which pages we're on. Are we starting now on step 6, page 2115?
Yes, we are. Okay. We're doing step 6 today, and
yes.
And this is in and we will do the step 7, program new identity, next week.
And so we can prepare for step 7.
Say it again.
We prepare step 7 for next week, and this week we're doing step 6.
Step 6 today, step 7 next week, and then pretty much after that we're going to do one module each week. This is just an expansion of the 7 steps that is all in the one module, and after that we'll essentially do a module each week. And you'll see in the syllabus the week number. This is week 4, seminar 4, and the corresponding reading for that.
Okay.
Does that make sense
off.
Now?
Yes.
Yeah, where you see the recordings posted for download or for online playback, there's a syllabus and an outline, and those are all in synchrony, and the outline is fairly annotated because it covers what I'm talking about, so you won't have to take notes, because it really expands and applies and doesn't reiterate essentially what's in the curriculum, so that it can together form more of a expansion and application of the material.
Okay.
Any other questions or anything else to talk about before we move into today's topic?
No, sir.
I think we're good.
We're ready.
All right. Okay. I'm going to put us on lecture mode. Hold on. And I'll want to preserve some time at the end for discussion.
Thank you.
Okay. We're talking today about writing new software. Step 6, specifically, author new experiences. Basically, we trust our stories. They're our reality. When our stories and our behaviors don't fit, we experience disharmony. So that means we have to change one or the other to restore harmony. Sometimes we revise our stories. Sometimes we simply change how we see reality. Now, we've considered if your story doesn't allow you to do certain things. If your story is that you're a procrastinator, that could disallow you from finishing early. If your story says you don't do technology well, or that you'll never acquire significant wealth, you'll live out that assumption. And some beliefs are like a bad map. They won't get you to where you want to go. So primarily, in a different way of saying it, the greatest thing that keeps you from getting what you want is your story about why you can't have it. So first, here's an application of a combined step 5, map changes, and step 6, author new experiences. An application is your debt story. And I would recommend doing the 3 exercises under debt story in step 5, if you haven't already. To encumber debt, the fact that you might not be able to afford something can become concealed or cordoned off. We partition what we want from the reasons we shouldn't have it or the fact we can't afford it. And more than math, money is about emotions and psychology. It's about an individual's money story and specifically a debt story. What do you really want when you want more money? Is it what you buy when you don't have money and pay with debt? We need money to know what we can't buy. Now, here are some of the self-talk narratives to justify spending in debt. It's just money. You can't take it with you. You only live once, just this one time. Now those are mine. You can't. I've got those franchised. You can't use those. You'll have to come up with your own. So let's talk about the debt cycle now for just a moment. The debt cycle I described in The Secret Language of Money is established by a scenario of either compulsive or undisciplined or one of the types of emotional spending that can result in a self-reinforcing cycle. For example, compulsion leads to shame, leads to disavowal, and then back to compulsion, because an addiction is a promise never kept. It's something that keeps you in the cycle and embedded. And you can fulfill a desire you didn't know you had by spending money you don't have. You can define yourself by acquisitions not paid for. You can even borrow based on how much money you can be lended rather than how much money you can pay back. Spending money generates the perception, both by the spender and the observer, of having money. Fulfilling a wish creates the desire. When desires define identity, the quest can be unrelenting. Many people who fall heavily into debt don't necessarily have psychological problems, but it's because spending takes on a life of its own. And with spending, the chase is on. They try to afford what they buy. And money can never buy what it represents emotionally. One of the first 2 clients I had as I made my transition, a wholesale transition to mentor coaching, was a professional who had a credit card debt of $500,000, none of which her husband knew about, and she was frantically trying to service the debt on that. Spending money is addictive. It changes the state of mind. We're going to spend an entire seminar looking at regulating states of mind. Rationalization can heighten with elastic boundaries. For example, payoff in 3 months can stretch to 6 or 12. Increasing abstraction of money emotionally distances the obligation of debt. Think about how when it's rendered an abstraction, and we've touched on this before, credit cards segment the pleasure of spending from the pain of paying back, two different portions of the brain. The insula, the part of the brain that processes pain, is not activated until money's paid back. The pleasure center, the nucleus accumbens, is activated when we spend money. So when credit cards segment the purchase from the payment, it enhances the segmentation and it substitutes not only the future, but an abstraction for payment. That's why people spend on average 23% more with a credit card than they do when they pay by cash or check. And then the faceless credit card company can become sort of like an authority. The credit card company is seen as an entity that wants to nuke your borrowing capacity, your credit score, as if they have it out for you to ask for the money that they lent you in good faith with a little interest. A recent study showed that credit card holders are consciously aware of only $4 out of every 10 they owe. And this underestimation is a form of denial. This is not just being a little bit off. This is being unaware of 60% of their debt. And debt has been called a secret sin because of the shame attached. It's hard to save also because of the way our minds work and our brains are wired. It's hard to resist the immediate pleasure of buying. It activates the same pleasure center in the brain, the dopamine. It creates an output of dopamine. So it's difficult to substitute a theory like future need, long-term saving, retirement, for the immediate pleasure. The most common way we're short-sighted in our decision-making is that we choose a small amount of something right now rather than a larger amount in the future. Here's what an expert in this area had to say. Uncle Junior to his nephew, Tony Soprano. You know, your father and me started that poker game over 30 years ago. We were talking one day about how the credit card companies, you know, they work their angle, how they don't care what you bought as long as you don't pay all at once. They juice you to death, and you thank them for letting you have a card. You'd rather be juiced than pay all at once. It's a certain kind of player. That's why they call it the executive game. So we render money an abstraction and deceive ourselves. Well, I can do it on my credit card since it won't be an immediate expense. The simplest statement was a Frontline documentary called The Secret History of the Credit Card, and this became the statement that was used. It's nice to be able to spend what you don't have. I would recommend a book by one of my, and I'll disclose, one of my buddies who's a repeat New York Times bestseller. She has written a book about the Madoff, being a Madoff. She and her husband were Madoff victims, and she is an elegant writer. This is one of the best books that I read. I was able to read it before it was published and, you know, have a little bit of input. Her name is Janine Roth. You probably are familiar with her because she's well-known in the area of women and eating and food and that sort of thing. But this book is called Lost and Found, and it's just a beautiful story about how she and her husband were Madoff victims, how they went through it, her money story, and how she emerged to understand so much more about it. It's a small book, but it's great reading. Lost and Found, Janine Roth, R-O-T-H. So, Richard Medley said simply, free money makes you stupid. Now, here are some possibilities to counter these tendencies that I've mentioned. Neuroeconomist Ben Seymour at University of College in London has shown that imagining a future purchase has the same effect in the brain as getting it. Remember, when you visualize, it activates the same pathway as when you see something through the optic nerve. Saving is easier when it's for something specific that we can envision. For example, it's easier and more specific and effective to create a distinct vision for each goal, such as vacation, college tuition, new house. Another, tangibly calculate the cost of debt so that it becomes a real figure as well. Another, concretely represent the magic of compound interest. Figure out what the money you spend. Let's say you want to spend $100. Figure out what that would be worth, compound interest, in 5 years, in 10 years, at retirement. And remember the idea from when you were a kid, just pay me a penny a day and double it for a month? The eighth wonder of the world is not that new mall in Dubai that's twice as big as one in Minnesota. It's compound interest. A penny a day and double it? Over $10 million. Automatically deduct retirement savings each month. Commitment device is a decision you only have to make once. So, now, to create a new money story, I think it's helpful to understand some of the dynamics of change. First, the idea of change will create excitement. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, trepidation, even anxiety. Then, as you continue rather than return to a comfort zone, expansion into a new experience. Then, finally, mastery. Now, there are two additional aspects of experiencing change that may seem paradoxical. And I'm mentioning these to you not that you're going to see manifestations of them necessarily, but just to inform your listening, kind of a developmental overview. One aspect, every step forward means relinquishing a past position. Someone must mourn. They must say goodbye emotionally as well as physically and practically to a familiar, maybe long-held and practiced old story, even one that doesn't work as well. This is a process. It's a developmental step. It's not something you can just say and make it so or recognize it and change it. It's like saying goodbye to an old friend to give up a habit or a pattern of behavior or a hope that by getting the old story just right or maybe doing it better is going to make it work. And secondly, the more subtle aspect in learning something new and creating change is an injury to self-esteem. Now, that may not make sense at first, but the carefully crafted old story, which, remember, from the client's perspective, isn't old or new yet, it's just the way things are until the client begins to see something in a different way. This carefully crafted story has aspects of identity attached, can be replaced by something better. So the very best efforts can suddenly be better. So that's kind of a narcissistic injury, an injury to self-esteem. So I see at least six components in this dynamic of change. Now, again, these are not headlines. You're not going to see signs you can label. These are just for your reflection to think about as internal conceptual markers. The myth that there is a perfect choice. The illusion that the perfect choice will solve all problems. The disappointment that nothing is really perfect. There isn't even an ultimate arbiter of fairness. The development. The recognition that nobody's going to take care of it for you. And the scientific term for that is called adulthood. The growth to take the next best action. And finally, the consolidation. The happy, sad experience resulting happy about the effectiveness of not constructing an obstacle to move ahead and experiencing freedom by creating it and sad about mourning an old story. And this juxtaposition of feeling happy and sad at the same time can feel perplexing to someone until you really understand it and you can empathically resonate with how both are true simultaneously. So my suggestion is to be sure and do the money mission statement exercise. It can orient and guide in the same way a mission statement does for an organization. And I'm going to spend time on it here, but just to highlight it for you. So let's talk about understanding and recognizing emotional couplings. Regardless of how logical we think we are, our first register of a new stimulus is emotional. Any new input goes directly to the amygdala in the midbrain, then to the hippocampus, also in the midbrain, to attach meaning. So this is really the site of our unconscious, where meaning is attached. Then it goes to the forebrain to process consciously, intellectually, logically, to make it make sense, to be conscious and make it make sense. So all of this, until it gets to the forebrain, is an unconscious process. And notice the emotional activation registers before cognitive areas of the brain come into play to assess options. And neuroscientists, neuroeconomists specifically, have demonstrated that we make decisions, especially purchase decisions, up to 10 seconds before we're even consciously aware. There's been other additional research that shows that somebody knows the answer to a puzzle 8 seconds before they're even consciously aware that they know the answer. So when we make a choice, we couple memory and wisdom from past experiences with the best likely future. Now, the part of the brain, as I mentioned, the part of the brain that anticipates pleasant outcomes, the nucleus accumbens, activates the buy decision. The don't buy decision, and the I gotta experience pain with paying for this thing, is the insula, an area involved in anticipating pain. So decision-making processes in the brain can involve shortcuts in analysis, such as brands, familiarity, trust. And each of these represent a link in the brain for knowing what to expect and our tendency to repeat what's familiar, such as a familiar brand. So at times, for example, emotional valuation can overwrite brain logical valuation. An emotionally significant equation can be one that got coupled in the past. In other words, money can be equated with emotional signifiers like power, freedom, evil, greed. So our minds attach meaning, these emotional couplings, that can derail logical choices. For example, a meaning that attaches power to money promises certain choices. A meaning that attaches selfishness to making a considerable sum of money can skew things in another direction. So the questions to accompany important choices to recognize the process of any emotional couplings and to understand and objectify any ones that can derail logic or reason. So basically, a couple of simple questions we ask ourselves with each important choice we make. What choices are worth making? How much does each choice cost? Not just money, but emotionally. And are they in alignment with our needs and ideals? The meanings we attach determine the emotional impact. So by changing the meaning, we change the emotional impact. So a simple act of reappraisal can begin a new story with a different emotional impact. With awareness, we can alter our responses, choose our responses. We can write a different money story. And I want to highlight something here that may be helpful, an application of this that I'm not going to spend time going over now, but there's an exercise, a work page of 14 ways to outsmart your brain to spend less. it's something that I included just as an application here. So now what we're talking about in a beginning way is to think outside the box. Now, how do you actually do that? What is the box? How do you think outside it? Randall Kennedy put it very simply. Thinking that frees itself of reflexive obedience to familiar signals. Now, I don't know where he published. I saw this written on the wall of the student union at Princeton and attributed to him. How do you know when you're in the box to get out of it, to revise your story or write another one? Well, these questions assume the story is there, like a given in the universe, as if the story, the proverbial box of the familiar and accepted, is the obstacle. But it's not there until we create it or accept it. And we're always free to change our minds, beliefs, and core assumptions. The box is the result of programming and conditioning. It's in adulthood, it's self-created. Now, boxes are not a bad thing. They don't have to be limiting. They can be defining, guiding, validating, expandable, a positive and adaptive default mode. It can be as simple as a point of view. People looked at Goliath and thought he was too big to hit. David looked at him, thought he was too big to miss. So listen to these different boxes to hear how very arbitrary and situational each one is, and listen for how each has its own intrinsic set of beliefs, behavior, and rules. The first, people treat a piece of processed leather as if it were sacred. They protect it, hide it, try to steal it. There are all kind of rules about what you can and can't do with it, even who can touch it or hold it. If it crosses an arbitrary line somebody draws, it can count for different points. 1, 2, -2, 3, sometimes 6. Football. Here's another. It moves in and out of your life. It varies daily. You want more, but you may keep doing the same thing not to get it. Two people can do exactly the same thing and obtain very different quantities. You can buy it or sell it, but the price changes daily, moment by moment. It's a stand-in for what you want, even for what you despise. And the lifeline clue, it's the most desired legal substance to all peoples of the world. Remember from our first seminar, money. And a third, a final. There's no clear definition of winning. It's always at risk. There's always a price to pay. There's always another level of success. Your money story, your life story, your wellness story, any story you write. Now, let's apply this notion to writing the next chapter of a money story. The box can be limiting or inflexible. The canal boat companies of the 1700s did not become the railroad companies of the 1800s. They stuck to their box. And in the 1900s, there were no Union Pacific Airlines. They stuck to their box. Good to gone. Motorola stuck to their story and slid from a premier electronics firm to a troubled industry. Meanwhile, Nokia asked and listened to children and young people just developing their stories and used their feedback to become world class. Good to great. So, the application here, open yourself to possibilities you haven't quite imagined yet. Scarcity is a rigid box. Abundance is expandable. And it's not there until you create it. No one can grant you freedom. You have to declare it. No one gives you power. You have to generate it, claim it, and not give it away. To simply stop doing something is not complete change. A new story means incorporating new beliefs and behaviors. You have to embody, actually live your new story. To abstain from an old story, from stuckness or repetition, is a beginning. But someone has to engage a new story and be in it before an old story can be actually fully given up. So, I want to talk about these AAA principles of change to author a new money story. The three A's, awareness, acceptance in action. One, you're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly assess each of these storylines with a question, is it working, and make it a simple yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. When I ask people what they most look forward to and what they're most afraid of for the next chapters of their lives, they often respond with vague dreams yet specific fears. The top of the lists of long-term concerns are two, health and money. A not-so-secret to success is that you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, or experience, and those are very interchangeable. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you'll still have to pay in some way. We've discussed how if you purchase something before you've earned money, you simply end up paying more for it. And another non-secret, people who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who enjoy paying the price. I'm doing it right now. I love this, and I believe it will really make a difference in your lives, for your clients, and the legacy of what you leave. That makes it easy to pay, and it's not even paying. It's doing what my passion is. The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate exactly what you want. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story, positive or negative, based on past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as the belief of abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. Simple math says that when you use your attention to focus on what you don't have, you deplete your energy to engage what you do have. Neuroscience and quantum mechanics tells us we get what we focus on. Now, here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and it assumes a momentum and power of its own. Remember, you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of it. And here's a short list of results when you focus on what you don't want. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt, non-confidence. Three, you're writing your own story. Decide specifically what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're not quite sure what they want. Here's a neuroscience law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? The first two questions a travel agent asks, where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? And a goal is like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go, make a map, and get the time determination. Now, a caveat, to know what not to do can be at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. Additionally, what you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is an engagement. It's a cathexis of energy. Anger is as passionate an attachment as love. If you find yourself resisting change, it's already occurred. And consider this. Most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor, but they aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. Four, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific, measurable goals? In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates fashioned a vision and specific goals for their life in business. 5 decades later, those 10 to 15% had 90% of the assets of the entire group. Another similar study, Dartmouth undergraduates, the 3% who fashioned goals had 97% of the assets of the group 35 years later. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. Focus enhances when you have a specific plan and strategy. So what I'd suggest from the workbook portion to review the exercise 10 steps to advance the plot of your new money story. And you'll see the highlight of establishing SMART goals, determining three key initiatives for each of the three SMART goals, and then deciding on the next best action. That's a useful way for some of your clients to structure specifically exactly what they want to do. It's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. Now, 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, measurement and time, where and when, the travel agent question. A good idea, I'd like to lose weight. A goal, I will reach 185 pounds by April 17, 2017 to run with my daughter in the marathon. Here's a good idea. I want to save more money for retirement. Here's a goal. I will pay myself first by setting up an automatic transfer of X amount, be very specific, to my retirement fund the first day of each month and have it be automatic. A good decision you only have to make once. Then, write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, a quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs and every August riding on the coast of Maine. But you'll have to substitute your own goals here. Then, reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up, when you go to bed. 5, you're writing your own story. Small changes can lead to big changes. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step to take for progress. This is professional coaching 101 first day. For example, if you feel overwhelmed at work with the amount of tasks, identify one specific thing that you can do in the next 24 hours that'll give you some traction. This focus on a simple, specific action creates a sense of effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Since he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed an average of 24 miles a day and completed the run in 143 days. He was immediately interviewed after the race and asked, how did he keep going when he was exhausted and he still had thousands of miles ahead? His response, I just kept going to the next telephone pole. So divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. During my specialty training in psychiatry, one of my first-year supervisors had a puzzling picture on the wall. It was a photograph in which everything seemed curiously out of focus. As I met with him every week, I glanced at the photograph. Finally, toward the end of the year, I asked him about it. Look carefully, Dave, he said. What do you see? Well, I walked over to the photograph to get a closer view. Closer didn't help. It still seemed out of focus. I saw no particular aesthetic value. My experience and considerable interest in photography didn't help at all. I said, Steve, the only thing I notice is if there's only one branch of one tree in focus in the entire picture. I thought I was kind of being funny. He nodded. He said, that's why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that while things may seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing you can have in focus and see clearly. which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year residents. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. Remember the NASA astronauts. It takes 25 to 30 days to etch a new pathway in your brain to make it permanent. And these are for fairly simple changes. Write your new story consistently for it to become the default mode. The difference between a genius idea and a true story of success, Malcolm Gladwell tells us in Outliers, is about 10,000 hours dedicated work to develop mastery. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, this is really simple. Good parents have known this for centuries, but sometimes it takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. We can foster change by conscious practices and effective tools. An infinite sea of new patterns and possibilities can be created to further new goals. The caveat, you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and to write new script for new experiences. In other words, a new story has to replace the old one. And there are no shortcuts, since long-term change requires consistent practice, repetition to groove new neuronal pathways and establish new neural networks. But there are effective and efficient methods to accelerate optimum change and ensure transformation. This is exactly what we have been and will be talking about. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback. To your partner or spouse, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. To your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? Then, how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Babemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest feedback on misbehavior has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself. He remembers who he is and why he is important to the life of the village. This may have been the original 360-degree feedback. Now, even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves, to get grounded and centered, to reconnect to our true essence. So, one possibility, find people who already successfully do what you want and get what you want. Research what they do in order to do your own version of it. Ask, learn, question, do your homework, build connections. Make a reasonable request, something easy and mutually beneficial, but make it your story. Guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. An interesting statistic to me especially. After giving a complete presentation about the benefits of their service or product, more than 60% of the time seasoned senior salespeople forgot to ask for the order. How to ask is a crucial factor. Ask clearly, confidently, sincerely. Virginia Satir, the well-known family therapist, was hired by the Michigan State Department of Social Services to submit a proposal on how to restructure the Department of Social Services to better serve the client population. 60 days later, she provided the department with a 150-page report. They said two things. This is the most amazing report, and how'd you come up with all these brilliant ideas? She said, well, I just asked all the social workers in your department what it would take for the system to work better. Now, a sidebar here. I know you've noticed that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new money story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first 4 steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide, compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, mapping change and authoring new experience in 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance instead of waiting for good luck. Luck is defined as probability taken personally, which is to say narcissism meets chance. And in your workbook, there's a review of research on goal setting that was really initiated by Goldsmith, one of the founders of executive coaching. I'm not going to reiterate it here, but I include it because the research was on why people give up on their goals, and the top reasons out of a large study about why people give up on goals. If you think about that, knowing this, being aware of it, and addressing it can be success insurance. So the inverse of giving up on goals is success insurance. 10, you're writing your own story, take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get it rejected, you still don't. So what do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor, he was told, for every 8 people in Carmel. He went to 12,500 homes and talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoon? And which newspaper should I advertise in? And as he was leaving, he asked, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In the first month, he took in $72,500. In his first year, he netted over $1 million. 11, you're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. Don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Beon was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience and equipment? He said, yeah. I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap. Well, when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. You're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6, but nobody told Cliff this. And while the other runners were sleeping, he kept shuffling along. He shuffled along for 3.5 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And finally, number 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. Ed Lorenz conceptualized chaos theory in the 1960s in this way. The initial state of events may seem unrelated and random, but eventually a pattern emerges, and in the end, all the pieces fit together. It's the study of phenomena which appear random, but in fact have an element of regularity, which can be described eventually using perhaps a different organizing perspective. In the end, all the pieces fit together. And Virginia Woolf put it very simply, arrange whatever pieces come your way. We're in discussion mode now. I'm interested what your thoughts are about some of these notions.
Well, this is Richard. This was just absolutely amazing. The one thing that really struck me was talking about. You really have to be in and living your new story in order for the old story to fade away. I mean, that's just, if you're just dreaming about being in your new story, you're not in your new story. You have to actually be taking action and living in your new story. So that was amazing to me. But all these, this was just worth so much today. Thank you.
Well, great. I'm glad you highlighted that, because that's the aspect of writing new code for our brain. Because you can't just have a belief or a new idea or a fact and expect that it's going to overwrite what's already there. But as it's replacing, as it's put into action, it becomes a part of the structure of our minds and brains. And the old facts, beliefs, the old structure is still there, but it's kind of like your lap when you get up to walk. You can always stop and recreate your lap, but it kind of impedes your forward progress. So when you look at activating the components that you want, the others will kind of fade away or be pruned away. You can always reactivate them, but it won't feel the same. You know, it's sort of like saying once something that was unconscious becomes conscious, it's no longer unconscious. It will not feel the same again. So, yeah, that's a great point to highlight. Other thoughts or questions? I'm interested in your reactions to this material. This is really applying a number of the aspects that we've sort of built up to, and then next time, the final step will be to program new identity to incorporate this in terms of changing the model that we operate on, which is to say our identity, in order to make it permanent.
One thing you talked about, small changes lead to big changes, in doing work with Tony Robbins and a few other people.
Ah, yeah.
If you look at a small circle in the middle and then a huge circle around, you make a small change in this little circle, as you move it out to the outer circle, you can see how much bigger it gets when it gets to the outer radius of the big circle. And it's really an easy way to see making a tiny change here of a degree or 2 degrees is much wider out there as you get to the outer edge of the circle.
Yeah, and our minds and brains are an energy field in a system. And any time you affect one even very small, even peripheral component of that system, it affects the entire system. And the whole notion of systems theory really fits with how our minds and brains work. So that's just simply another way of saying what you just said.
Yeah, and that also is not a linear function. I mean, it's a much larger function.
And we're going to apply systemic thinking to states of mind when we get to that module and that component of our seminar. So that's going to be another application that will fit any story and be sort of a foundational aspect. So other thoughts, questions from anyone else?
Can I ask a question? Photo that you had in your lecturer's room of the tree that was out of focus and then the one branch was in focus. Why don't you explain the meaning of that?
Well, you know, his point in the picture, that everything seemed out of focus. Everything seemed confusing and blurry. But if you look closely, there's always something you can focus on. You know, and remember the story about Terry Fox. You know, if you look at 3,339 miles, it's like totally overwhelming. But if you focus on one aspect, the next pole you go to, then all you have to do is focus on that telephone pole, because when you get there, then all you have to do is focus on the next telephone pole. So you have an idea, a destination, but it's one focus at a time. That's one of the things, in a very practical way, we do in coaching, is to shrink the change to look at the next step. Because sometimes the reason that somebody may seem to be resisting something is it just seems too large or too abstract, are too nonspecific. They don't know exactly what the next step is. So that's one of the things, in a very practical way, we do with our clients is to help them shrink the change to look at what's the next step, because that substitutes a model of effectiveness, something that they can internalize themselves in and look at what's the next step. And that experience of effectiveness and mastery rewards that process so it enhances itself and repeats and replicates the desire to recreate that. Does that explanation help any?
Yes, it helps me. Thank you.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I love
that
explanation too.
That statement that you may not always know what the next right thing is, but you almost always know what it isn't. That I borrowed and got permission to steal from an old codger who was an alcohol treatment counselor back in the day when I had a service on the alcohol treatment unit, and he was one of the most effective, down-to-earth guys, and he would say that to every one of the people who came through the program because it was helpful to them, because they weren't accustomed to doing the next right thing, but they knew damn well what the next right thing wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got that down, then you at least have some, you know, you bought a little time to figure out what the next right thing is, because you have a whole lot of experience of knowing what it is. So he gave me permission to steal that. So that's his legacy.
Awesome.
Well, we're out of time. If, you know, anything else that you think about, or you know, jot it down, and we'll talk about it next time. Thanks all for so much.
Thank you very much.
Energy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Enjoyed it very much.
You bring it alive, all of you. Thank you.
You got it. All right.
Bye
everybody.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.